The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WPSL presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with your questions and comments at 220-9788-220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Buenos dias, Stuart, Florida. It's Cristiano and Mateo. I'm also known as Christian and Matthew, or as Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, or as other terms that our wives call us. Speaking of wives, I think we have a special guest later on today. Is that true?
It is true.
Not Father Durbin. You're the Rabbi Durbin. I'm the Father Christian. Okay. So tell me.
Although it would be funny one day to switch roles and for us to do that. Maybe do a pulpit swap.
A pulpit swap. But how do we miss that for Halloween? I know that would have been like pseudo-sacrilegious. And with current events, we probably wanted to keep everything sacred right around about now and not be trying to have, like, silly kinds of fun with our religions. But
I don't know if my suit would fit you.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. The thing is, okay, guys, so, you know, we have this show, A Priest and a Rabbi, with Rabbi Durbin and myself. And part of it's just like, hey, get to know these, you know, funny religious characters and see they were just kind of normal guys and make religion a little more accessible and have us talk about things like Alyssa Milano and 90210 plus things as heavy as anti-Semitism and the Book of Leviticus. But we had a gem there where you and I, you could have been, you know, Father Durbin for the day, and I could have, you know, been Rabbi Christian, and we could have gone trick or treating together. But here's the issue. The issue is being the father is a little easier because you just throw the collar on, right? Get a suit, throw a collar on. People are like, oh, I think that guy's like a priest or a pastor or something. But with you, my friend, your MO is rocking like the suit, and then if it's a high holiday or a holiday service, that's when you're throwing on, like, if I'm using the right terminology, the kippah?
So the kippah we would wear, you know, anytime that we're leading services or anytime out in the community. I'd wear the prayer shawl, wear my talit.
The prayer shawl, the talit. But you're not going to be wearing the prayer shawl or the talit when you're going down to Wawa to grab your Colombian coffee.
No.
If you did, would that be not sacrilegious but not respectful of?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It has to be out of place. Why would I be wearing it?
Well, again, this goes back to this common theme that you and I have all the time, which is about evangelism. Would allow you to strike up conversations while you're sitting there at the Wawa, getting your Colombian coffee, looking for where the heck that milk is that they have in the fridge that some kid stole with him and took over to Martin County High School, and you're looking for that, and you're in your prayer shawl, and someone walks up and says, hey, what is that thing? You're like, well, I'm glad you asked.
Absolutely. Teachable moment.
Teachable moment. And so could that be an option, or would the higher-ups in Toronto or whoever the higher-ups who look over you say, Rabbi, that is not appropriate?
I mean, I think the higher-up would be God. God may look down and say, what are you doing?
Okay.
It's not a service. It's not a time to wear that. I mean, I do think that there are times that I do wear it. You know, we will be having on November 18th at the Unity Church in Stuart, we're going to be having our second annual Thanksgiving interfaith service. So with something like that, I would absolutely wear my talit. But I think it's also, and it's an interesting point that you make in terms of evangelizing or really spreading the word. Because I think that's, in today's culture, in today's society, that's really it. And I think for us as Jews, there is no more greater time than now to really be able to express our sense of Judaism, given the events of last Saturday in Squirrel Hill, Pennsylvania, at the Tree of Life congregation in Pittsburgh. You know, to be able to reflect back on a extreme tragedy of extreme violence and extreme hatred and anti-Semitism, while looking forward to being able to say, well, what measures can we as Jews take to be able to both express our solidarity with the Jewish community, their Jewish community, our Jewish community, and what are the opportunities that lay before us. And I think some of it is to be proud. I am a very proud Jew of my faith. And I think that there are things that we can do to try and soften such a devastating tragedy.
Right. So as you can tell that this show, we got a couple things going on for the show today for you. All of our amazing listeners are so happy. We're going to start to get callers in now. We're just moving on up, man. Next thing you know, ESPN is going to want us to come on and do like a 20-minute Sports Center segment, the priest and the rabbi talking about NBA highlights. But until we get to that point, we're very happy to be here at WSU and working with our wonderful Michael producer here. But if... today we will be, of course, we have to reflect a little bit on what the events that inspired over this last week. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we're talking about the signs of anti-Semitism, the reoccurrence of it, the permission for it. And then, my gosh, just days later.
24 hours later. We recorded last Friday.
Yeah.
And 24 hours later, when we finished at 10 o'clock.
Yes. The massacre happens. It happens. So it's so we're going to talk a little bit about like that, reflect upon that. Then we will also catch up on some of the challenges that we give one another as a rabbi, as a priest. Last time it was the 90210 challenge. And then this week was the Alyssa Milano challenge for myself. How we make the transition from that, from the Tree Life Synagogue, I don't know. But we're going to see if we can do that without being completely irreverential or disrespectful. And then we have a guest. We have a wonderful guest. We have a beautiful guest coming, if I might say so myself. It is the rabbi's wife. The rabbi's wife, who is also a rabbi. And she's going to be coming, and not only coming to talk and say, hey, I'm just the rabbi's wife. No. She's coming as an expert to help guide us through sex, where it's a part of religion that we sometimes do not talk about. Sex, it's just we shirk and we freak out about it, but it's in the Bible. We talk about it in the Bible. It's something we need to discuss. So we're going to do a hint of that today, and I would assume that we would probably pick that up in another episode because that's just a hot topic that I think will spike a lot of curiosity. So first, for this first part of our show here, before we bring in our wonderful guest, you know, you had a gorgeous and a beautiful service at Beit Chaim in Stuart, and you made it a community service. It wasn't just for your community, right? The community was invited to everyone. St. Mary's Episcopal Church posted on their Facebook. A bunch of people from St. Mary's came, which was great. You were so wonderful to be able to invite me up at the end to say a benediction. I think a service like that is what you're talking about. It both does shows unity with the Jewish community, within the Jewish community, and you showing unity for your brothers and sisters out in Pittsburgh. But then it also invites in all the rest of us, all of us Gentiles, to come in and stand shoulder to shoulder. It was standing room only in there. And to be there and reflect and listen and hear about their prayers and thoughts are nice, but it's not enough, right? There's more that needs to be done. This is real. This is real life. We're not reading a history book. This just happened. And what do we, Gentile and Jew, want to do to end this horrific disease of violence? And we all have all of us have a responsibility. Thoughts and prayers are great. Pray. But there are action steps we need to take to help end this disease.
You know, I think part of the challenge that we faced, obviously, with the event that happened on Saturday morning, and sending out a notification to our congregation on Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, to join us on Tuesday night at 5:30. Now, we expected anywhere from 50 to 100 people. We didn't expect 300 plus and a standing room only. And I think that what it showed us as a Jewish community is that we are a community. We are not only Temple Beit HaYam, that we are Martin County, that people care and are very passionate of the tragedy that happened and trying to eradicate it. And I think that there was something really beautiful in that space of people coming together to show solidarity. For us as Jews, any Jewish person who is persecuted or you know, any act of violence in any way to any Jewish community around the world affects all of us. And I think that that's really something to recognize, is that although Pittsburgh may be 1,400 miles away, it might as well be half a mile away. It doesn't matter. You know, internationally, we as Jews, we are a small people. We are a committed people, but we are unified around the world. And I think that that, you know, listening to my colleagues around the country who held vigils from Sunday night all the way to last night, of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people who flocked into synagogues to show their support, which I think is it shows us as a society where we are, that I think that there are good people. There are people who really take this and say, enough, enough, enough is enough. And as my comments, as you had mentioned, prayers and thoughts, yes, it is meaningful and it is important. But when are we going to get to the point where prayers and our thoughts and our condolences, they're not enough? And I think in today's world, we need to take a very firm and very important task and responsibility, which is about accountability. Accountability for our leadership, accountability for one another, and to strengthen the bonds of who and what we are. You know, it wasn't by accident that I asked you to do our closing benediction. Part of it is from a collegial basis. Another part is because of our very strong friendship. But the other is I need our community, both Martin and our Jewish community, to know that we are also supported by those of our non-Jewish community who stand arm to arm with us. And I think that was the big message.
Yep. And I think the more and more that we can see that and witness that of having the entire community, with religious community, even if beyond the religious community, to be there and standing arm to arm and shoulder to shoulder. This is so it doesn't become, again, a Jewish thing, or if people just look at it and say, oh, they feel bad for the Jewish community, and then they move on, as opposed to saying, no, this is affecting all of us. There is this plague of hatred that is happening. It's popping up. In just the same week, you had the guy walks into the church, the black church in Kentucky. This is the next day. The doors are locked. He can't get in. He goes over the Winn-Dixie, pops two people over there. We have the packages that just happened the week before throughout all the people who are critics of politicians. And so it's just this, there's this like this permission, there's this perversion, I guess, of how do we comprehend and understand and deal with those maybe we think are the other or we don't like, and how do we express that? And each single one of us has to stand up to it, whether something as simple as you see something, say something, but also stopping and ending conversations that start to go in the direction that are going into places of hatred and forming the other, because it's become this commonplace, and we all need to be a part of that. And I would say your prayers definitely help form you into what really truly is the beloved community of God, to say, God, teach me. Let me be honest with you, God. I can be a pocket racist, right? I think for all of us to have this, I think it's in all of us, this tribalism that's been here since the beginning of millennia. Tribalism can be good. It can give us comfort. It can give us ease. It can give us support. But the negative part of it forms exclusivity. It forms judgment. It can form hatred, looking down, and also just to rid other folks who are maybe threatening your tribe. So we're here at the station. We would love to get your phone calls, too, on all this. 772-220. It's WSTU. But what the heck does WSTU mean? Those phone numbers are 9788. It's right in front of me, Christian. You just need to look down. So 772-220-9788. And also, you can always stream on this and watch us right now on YouTube if you go on to the WSTU1450.com. On there, look at the YouTube link, and you can see this good-looking gentleman next to me, and you'll soon see his better-looking wife.
But I think – thank you. I think that the biggest challenge, at least that – In my understanding, is also, have we entered into a new realm, which is now the new normal? That the cycle of violence that we are seeing in the past has been rather random or sporadic, Whereas today, it is almost on a daily basis we are seeing, whether it be violent attacks like in Pittsburgh against the Jewish community, if it's racially motivated, if it is comments or even thoughts that are in one's heart, that we're seeing it on a much more rampant basis. And I think for, as a Jewish community and as a rabbi, there's a part of me that says to the United States and to people around the world, open your eyes. It is here. It is not going away. And from the events of watching and witnessing 11 Jewish people in prayer lose their lives for the only thing that they did was to congregate in the synagogue to express their love and their devotion and their passion to God. And they were killed on our day of rest, on God's day of rest of Shabbat. And I think that the part of me that says to the rest of the world, wake up. Wake up and see what's going on. And if there are many of us who stand against what about those hatred beliefs, to be able to stand up and to voice our opinion. God gave us a voice. And I say, as a Jewish people, God gave us the ability to raise our Jewish voices and all voices out of outrage and out of concern, that we have a responsibility, because we are created, as we, you and I both profess, B'Tselem Elohim, created in God's image. And if we are created in God's image, that means that we must see every single person in that same light.
And I say, if someone from any kind of Abrahamic religion, where you look at the scripture, and just from a Judeo-Christian standpoint, you look at Genesis, God created man and woman, he made them in his image, and it was good, period. That's it. That every man, every woman made are good. They are made in God's image, the Imago Dei. And I try to reference that during the benediction only because is that we, anything that degrades or looks down or any form of racism or bigotry or xenophobia, whether it's for an immigrant, whether it's for someone of another religion, for another ethnicity, is completely and absolutely unbiblical. And that's not me. That's from the Word of God. That's from the Word of God. That's from in Genesis. So this is something that needs to be stood for. So we have our first caller here, and we want to be able to honor this before we hit off the break. So first we have Miss Eleanor, who will be joining us. Miss Eleanor, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Father Christian. I am a member of Rabbi Durbin's congregation. The reason I'm calling is I still can't wrap my head around the fact that we are only 2% of the entire population, and yet we are so feared and hated. And I think maybe every so often it should be put out the contributions that this small percentage of people, the contributions that we've made throughout the world, whether it be medicine, science, music. I mean, you have the Gershwins, you have Al Jolson, you have so many people in all activities of life who have contributed so much. And maybe if we really try to see the positive in the Jewish people and in all people and stop the negativity, it would really be remarkable.
No, it's a great point, Eleanor, and thank you for calling in that. And we've talked about this in the last couple episodes, is that this need, and this is what I liked about the service, is that you had a lot of non-Jews at that service standing shoulder to shoulder by just saying, also, we're all just humans. We're all just the same here. And since we've seen this thousands and thousands upon years of anti-Semitism, of Jews becoming the scapegoats for so many different civilizations, this is just ingrained in so many of our cultures. Is how does that get broken? So we just see, we don't see this we can break this horrible pulse of anti-Semitism. And to Eleanor's point here, as just saying, well, not only are we just this a normal brother and sister like you and I, we're also incredible contributors to society.
But I think, and Eleanor has a very important point too, which is, you know, look at all that, you know, in some semblance, 2% of a world population has contributed, from technology to that, you know, beautiful thing that you have in your cell phone called a SIM card. Who created the SIM card? To, you know, a Google internet search of who invented and created Google. You know, it was Israel. I mean, there are so many innovations and technology through medicine and just modern technology that so many people are unaware were created by Israel that we use every single day. And I think to be able to, you know, discuss that and to talk about it and to be able to show the importance and the beauty of what we as Jews have also contributed to our society disproportionately on a world stage to try and break, you know, those stereotypes, those boundaries, those evil thoughts that lurk in people's minds.
Do you still think, and we've talked about this before, that for me, and this is going to be my naive Christian point of view on this, Christian as in my name Christian, but also as in my faith, that in some sense or commitment to evangelism in a way which does open the doors more because for the community at large to be able to get to know and relate and become friends with their Jewish brothers and sisters, do you think that would help a lot to break a lot of the stigma and to break a lot of ridiculous anti-Semitic thoughts that get passed because just still there's this undertone that Jews are the other. They're a tribal community that kind of stay within their own. And the minute you walk into Bet Hayam Temple, you see this incredibly diverse, wonderful, hospitable, loving community. It's just such a beautiful community that for anyone who might come in from hearing things either from their parents, from their grandparents, from their own community, those stereotypes or those that could grow into fears, grow into horrific fears if they got a screw loose in their head, would walk in there and hopefully, I would say, begin to defray and just be like, oh, just like you and me.
But I think it's twofold. One, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we and both of our congregations are a warm and, you know, inviting place to say to whomever would like to enter through our doors. I mean, we don't lock our doors. I mean, in the physical sense of not permitting people to come in, we are a house of worship, which means that we take anyone who wishes from a spiritual perspective, a connection perspective, a community perspective, to come join us for our Shabbat, Friday evenings, Saturday mornings. You know, we are a welcoming community. Come see us and see what we are about. Come experience what we profess. But my challenge isn't for those who come through our doors. My challenge are for the ones who don't come through our doors, whether they be Jewish or not Jewish. You know, in that regard of, you know, the stranger that's on the street who refuses to understand or even come to terms with, you know, reality or what the situation is, right? It's the same notion when we talk about, you know, homelessness on the street, right? When we talk about those type of things, it's, well, you know, we as people are professing as much as we can to try and help those in our community. But unless you're there to see it, it's not really working. And for those that don't see it, how do we encourage others to be able to experience and to have that perspective of what we're doing? It's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge.
It's a huge challenge. So I would say that a big challenge for all of us in Martin County, is to challenge yourself. If you haven't been to Bet Hayam, just go. Just go. Go check out a service. Go hang out. If you've never, ever done it, just do it. Start a movement to do it. I challenge you right now, before the end of 2019, just to get over there. And I think the St. Mary's and also Bet Hayam will also get our dialogue going again, where before I went over to Bet Hayam and we had an open dialogue, but then have the same thing, have the rabbi come over to us. So we were, before, again, we're going to throw it a break, but let's just stay right here because we got another caller coming in, because when we come back from break, we'll be switching it up just a little bit. So can we bring in Mr. John? Mr. John, thank you so much for giving us a call.
Yeah. What do you think about average citizen be able to buy assault weapons in the state of Florida?
Well, the only reason why I pause is that I'm trying to stay within the boundaries of
that killer that went into the killed them Jewish people. He had an assault weapon, and he might not be able to kill as many of them if he didn't have this, 30-round clip. and I think it's outrageous in Florida. It's an average citizen should have a military weapon like that. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. And I know that the challenge with a priest and a rabbi having a conversation about more of a interreligious talk is then it you can't help but sometimes it will bring up, obviously, this was a major piece of this, which was which talking about gun control or gun rights. Mm-hmm. Mike, did you have?
Well, I think that's an important conversation to have, but I think it might be outside this current conversation of faith and that element of the issue at hand.
Yeah, if I mean, what do you think, Rabbi?
I think it's a conversation that we can certainly have and entertain later. I think that it is a big issue. I can certainly comment for myself, and certainly not representing the opinions of my congregation, but a part of me that the overwhelming part of me that says there is absolutely no reason to have an assault rifle or an assault weapon with its explicit intent of killing people. You know, you're not taking an assault rifle, an assault weapon, hunting. You take it for an explicit purpose. There should be no wavering on this conversation. But again, I think it does go outside the realm of what we're talking about today. I certainly, you know, would certainly jot it down for maybe a future conversation that we can have in terms of later development throughout the course of the program. But
and I think what we can do is also look at that. And John, thank you for bringing this up, because as you can see, we're sitting here being like, okay, great. What do we do with this? This is a topic that definitely needs to be addressed. And how do we look through it through theological eyes? What we can offer as a rabbi and as a priest is to answer that question through a theological lens. And since we are not legislators, but yes, what and which would be our points of view, not the points of view of St. Mary's Episcopal Church or Beth Hayim Temple. So, John, I don't know if we gave you really the full-bodied answer that you were looking for, but what you did do is plant a seed for us to be able to take that on, because it's an extremely hot and important topic, and completely understand where you're coming from because of the horror and destruction that weapon caused upon so many people. So thank you for calling in. And so, because we need to bounce, be able to get our guest in, so we are going to throw to break. And before we do, if I could do a shameless plug here, you know, on Sunday we are showing the movie All Saints, which is at St. Mary's Episcopal Church at 5 p.m. There's going to be hot dogs and food and stuff there at the Pittenger Center. But the reason why this is really cool, Rabbi, is that you and I have talked about this. It's a real life story about a priest that was sent in to shut down a parish because it was dying. But what happened was that a flock of Burmese refugees showed up at his door, and of course causes all kind of tension with his community. But in the end, they are the ones who give the wisdom to show how they can keep this church thriving by using the crops and the land that God has given them. So that's at 5 o'clock coming up on this Sunday at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. So, all right, we will be right back with the one and the only Ms. Rosa, the rabbi's wife, who will be talking with us about, sex. So stick around. Welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi. And right now, we're about to get plural.
Should be actually, at this point, A Priest and Rabbis.
Well yes. You read my mind, brother man. We are going to A Priest and Rabbis. And knowing that they might also be A Priest and Raboos, as we know that. Because in the past, we have found the nickname for our beloved rabbi as the Raboo. Because, boy, you're my boo. So, now, who is the one who calls him his boo? Not only, but his beautiful, talented, and also videographer who threw us on Facebook Live about 5 minutes ago, Miss Rosa, the Rabbi Rose, who is over at the Hillel Foundation at FAU, if I'm saying that correctly. But welcome to the show, And you will be talking with us about, you know, we've already covered everything from anti-Semitism to we dipped into a little bit into the whole gun conversation. And now we're just going to go for the whole trinity here. Let's go for of hot topics. Let's go for sex. So, Rabbi Rose, why did your husband say, hey, babe, you got to come on for this because this is something you know how to speak well about?
I'll tell you a story. So before we got married, we were seeing a rabbi for some, you know, premarital counseling, a rabbi we both trusted, a lot of experience. And we knew the questions that he was going to ask us because we're both training to be rabbis at the time. We're very aware of the things that we're urged to talk to premarital couples about. And even so, when he said to us in the most non-racy, non-scintillating way possible, tell us about your physical relationship, Matt's face turned the color of a red delicious apple. I can't describe how mortified he was. And it was just the two of us in a room with this rabbi. And so although he has these conversations with couples, this is not his favorite topic to go public about.
But I looking back on
so
that moment, what I did appreciate was certainly when the rabbi had said to me after seeing my face was as red as a tomato and said, so Matt, you really don't want to be here right now, do you? And I said, no. And he said, do you feel like you want to crawl under a rock? And I said, yeah. You know, and when he asked the questions, when I remember, it was one word answers. So is your relationship, how is your intimate relationship? It's fine. We don't need to talk about it. Let's move on. Let's go to financial. Let's go to community. Let's go to spirituality. My belief in my connection to God. Let's not. But you know what? In looking back on that moment, you know, 11, 12 years ago, a part of me that says I'm actually very grateful that we did have that conversation, however uncomfortable it was and continues to be.
So what that uncomfortability because it's so funny, the minute your wife just started talking about 30 seconds ago, and she started talking about that story, it's like you knew where she was going. Your whole body began to sink into your seat. You're a man of great confidence, a great orator. I just went to this memorial service where you commanded 300-plus people to lead them through such a tragic time to find peace and some kind of comfort. But then you mentioned three letters, S-E-X, that more pertain to you, and boy – man, you were looking for the restroom real quick around here.
Well, listen, that's why we're a good team, because this is my favorite topic. I could talk about it all day, much to Matt's huge embarrassment. And it's good that I can talk about it, because one of us at least needs to. We've been married 10 years. We have three kids. So obviously, we've participated in the act. And as rabbis, we have to be able to talk about it. We have to be able to have positive conversations with our kids about it. It's important. And it's a positive mitzvah in Judaism. It's a positive commandment for married folks to have sex, especially on Shabbat. And we have to keep talking about it and keep doing it and spread that message.
Okay, so you are mainly surrounded by college kids?
That's right.
And the work that you do. So let me ask you a question. When you start talking about sex with them, the truth is, I mean, what would you say? I mean, it's hard to give it a percentage, but would you say the majority of them, half of them, maybe only 10% of them have already experienced the event of sex?
I would, for the kids that come to, like, say, our educational offerings, at least half of them have dabbled in this world. And last week, our topic, we have a weekly lunch and learn every Wednesday for the college students. And I brought in an Orthodox rabbi, and this is his field, and he's amazing at talking about it. And, you know, we both acknowledge that although we're supposed to have sex within the bounds of marriage, and that's what makes it a holy act, that ship has sailed for a lot of our college students. And so we have to be very aware of that and relate to that. We can't make them feel shamed or terrible about the decisions they made, but rather how they can view sex going forward with the decisions they're making now and in the future.
And how much of that conversation is maybe saying, what do you think about maybe pulling back? You've experienced it, you've had sex, but now approaching it in a different way where maybe with your partner you're going to abstain for a little bit and try that on and see what it is because of A, B, and C for whatever reasons you might think are right, whether it's biblical or just from ethical or just from an overall health standpoint. Do you guys ever go in that direction?
We do, but that idea really blows their minds. So we frame it in the way of traditionally, Orthodox Jews, for example, abstain from sex for 2 weeks out of the month. And the rabbi was explaining that when they reunite every month after the 2 weeks, it's a very romantic time, he was explaining. And I think that was interesting to the students to hear about that, that actually maybe abstaining for sex and then having it within the bounds of marriage or within the bounds of a respectful monogamous relationship can actually make it better.
Okay. So have you ever had experiences where you can have you're talking to someone who's either single, who's just more doing, is part of, I'm going to sound like such a conservative cleric here, the hookup culture. is there a way that while you're work with them and getting them to say, hey, let's rethink this, you know, this hookup culture. And why, you know, sure, there's an excitement to it if you're young and you're going out and you're meeting different people and whatever. But there's also this other part of the hookup culture, which can lead to a lot of hurt, can lead to pain, it can lead to also just physically like STDs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can get into the whole your body is your temple thing. How far do you go with that? Because without going so far where you just will just turn them off and be like, well, I want to come in here and be just judged or told how to redo my sex life.
Well, we go very far.
Okay.
Last week we had a program called Hook Up with Hillel, where we talked about all these issues, hookup culture, and also consent. And we had a lot of very detailed conversations about what does consent look like. That's a huge issue on college campuses today. And that ties into this whole idea of respect and communication about sex and making sex a more holy, sacred act. And why the kids feel such pressure to have sex. Is it really about the physical rewards? Because I don't think they're doing it that well in college while they're drunk at frat parties. I don't think it's that satisfying to either party. I think that they're doing it to tell their friends about it or to validate some insecurities or to respond to the pressures in society, especially for young men, to have conquests. And so we really talked about it in great detail.
So where does that go? So you have men. We're men, a lot of times our masculinity is defined upon you have this set of... You have this set of skills that God has blessed you with as a man, whether it's your confidence, it's your humor. It's like I always look at Hitch, you know, the movie Hitch, where he said, use what you got. If you're a funny guy, be the funny guy. If you're a goofy guy, be the goofy guy. If you're the good-looking guy, you know, play the suave, good-looking guy, but be you. So as a man, you start to learn that. And you're like, okay, this is what I got. I'm the intelligent guy. Like, I'm the geeky chess guy. But the geeky chess guy is good. Like, that's confidence. And you can use that where a woman's like, holy cow, this guy's, like, smart. He's confident. He's really good at chess. People like him because of it, and a man finds out, like, oh wow, she I get interest in this woman, this sophomore, this really cute sophomore in my class. And there is a part of, well, how far can that go? Can you get to a place where she is willing to invite you into an intimate relationship? She says yes for the kiss, just for, let's just start at first base, right? At the kiss. But there's that pressure of saying, as a man, you can really show the strength of your masculinity, the strength of your confidence by a woman allowing into her emotionally, but also physically. The rabbi right now is wanting to run across the street.
That was very graphic for him.
Peruvian restaurant, even though it's not open, and just eat a bunch of chicken and get out of this conversation. But I guess it's just as religious leaders. I mean, this is the real. This is the reality. And this is culture saying one thing, right? And then the other part from the feminine side, there's a culture saying one thing about what it means to have a man and to be sexually intimate. So you're in the thick of it more than the rabbi, Mr. Rabbi and I. A lot of times we're talking to married couples already, talking about how can they rethink their own sex life. But you are with those who are just developing their sexual life and sexual language.
And I think for my task, the most important thing is for them to think about this topic of intimacy and physical relationships through a Jewish lens at all. For that, that's a huge step if I can go there. So I'm not going to start with wait till marriage because that is so countercultural, and they won't relate to that at all. They'll see me as judgmental. And as a progressive rabbi, the most important thing is for them to relate to me, to, yes, see me as a rabbi and as a role model, but also be someone they know they can open up to. And you know, I do a lot of pastoral counseling, and they have to be able to talk to me about what's actually going on in their lives. But to frame their physical relationships within a Jewish context and talking about the values of, you know, respecting your body and Shmirat HaGuf, you know, guarding yourself physically and emotionally, and also the traditions around sex in marriage and how that's awesome and, you know, being very positive about that. And that's how I have to frame the conversation. So if I can even get them to see that the goal is not to have sex, but maybe to have intimacy and maybe to have like real relationships with their peers that don't exist just over like DMing on Instagram, but that they're actually just kissing. And maybe there's something really amazing about that and they don't have to rush to the next step and actually, you know, seeing intimacy for what it is and not what they see portrayed on the internet or in movies, but actually, you know, figuring out what it is and that it's special and it can go step by step and they don't have to rush into things. And if I could do that, I think I've done a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'll admit it. I'll watch Riverdale, you know, once in a while. Right, Riverdale. And it's wild when you watch any of this Riverdale or any, it's kind of like, you know, TYA or, you know, what it's for young audiences, that how quickly you have teenagers on these episodes, that how quickly the show, the writers will move the leads into a situation where they're definitely about to have sex. And you're like, what? I'm like you right now, Rabbi, Mr. Rabbi. I want to run out the door because I just get so uncomfortable that are we really about to suggest these two 16-year-olds, right? These two juniors in high school or sophomores are about to go upstairs into a room and have sex. I mean, that Riverdale had an episode where the lead characters all went into, you know, separately into rooms. And it's like, holy cow. I mean, that just puts our work back so far because that's just popular culture saying, if you like someone, you get intimate with them, you feel like there's some kind of L word being used, maybe love, whether it's like or love, then it's okay to go have sex, right? But how much, I guess, do I want to say? Because the Bible, from a Christian perspective, is for the most part pretty clear. There's some interpretation there, but Paul refers a lot to staying away from sexual immorality. And also then the Bible talks a lot about the sacredness of the wedding bed, that what is shared between a man, woman, and a bed, and keeping that so sacred to how important and beautiful monogamy is. The most physically intimate place you can be with someone besides childbirth is in the bedroom, right? Sex. And so you want to be able to share that beauty with one person. And when you share it with others and a bunch of others, you take away from that pure intimacy you get with one person to build the gorgeousness of it. But that is not what's practiced often. And Paul, St. Paul, will talk about in his, you know, he was a Pharisaical Jew, about this, he refers a lot to sexual immorality. He doesn't say you can't have sex before marriage, but the majority of scholarship would say he's referring to sexual immorality would be sex outside of marriage. So for us, I think sometimes it's talking about what are the benefits of holding off? What are the benefits of taking your time? What are the benefits of at least just waiting for a lifelong commitment or a commitment before sex? If you want to try to find a good man, wait for a guy who's willing to wait for a full committed relationship before going into sexual intimacy. You really want women, you want to find a good guy? Don't hook up with him. You don't. Because then he just sees you as a hookup and your wife material went out the window. You wait and say, I'm not doing this until marriage, and he sticks around, odds are you got yourself the potential for a good man.
I think so. But, you know, it's really interesting when talking to college students, because folks are getting married later and later now. So the idea of waiting till marriage was okay when folks were getting married 22, you know, 25 latest, you're an old maid. But, you know, most people aren't getting married till about 30 now, at least. And, you know, the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin, you know, could be true for a lot of folks if they're waiting until they're married. And that might be an unrealistic goal in today's society to wait that long. And so if I were to say to students, oh, wait till marriage, I mean, they're not even thinking about marriage. You know, they're thinking about just trying to get through school and they work and they're raising money to just pay for their classes. You know, they can't think that far in advance. So again, you know, I try to frame it within Jewish text. So even in this week's Torah portion, Haye Sarah, our matriarch Sarah dies at the very beginning and her husband Abraham mourns for her. And it's the first incident of mourning and loss in our text. And there's a midrash, an explanation of the Torah portion that teaches that there used to be a light over Sarah's tent, and that was symbolic of her connection to God. It was a physical manifestation of her connection to God. And when she died, the light went out. So when Isaac brought home his wife, Rebecca, and Isaac was probably around 40 at that time, so he was a 40-year-old virgin, we assume. Now, when he went into that tent and with Rebecca, the light sure came back on. And so, you know, we could talk about, oh, spiritually, that's about the connection to God returning or the connection, the promise of future generations. But I think it was just Isaac being so relieved, you know, that they could enter that very sacred act of sex. So, you know, when I share a story like that with the students, you know, it does teach them that the ultimate goal is sacred, monogamous, you know, relationships that are sexual, hopefully a marriage, but also just what does that mean? Let's unpack that for what that means in our lives. Like, do you think that you should be in a tent with just one person? And what would it mean if that light went on for you?
This is, if you have any questions, to please call. We got a Rabbi Rose here. The phone number here is 772-220-9788. Love to hear your questions regarding this. So, again, can I just acknowledge how funny this is that Rabbi Durbin is usually one to have a plethora of words pouring forth from his mouth.
A plethora of words.
A plethora, just pouring forth like the Niagara Falls, and right now he is in a drought.
No. I wanted my wife to have the opportunity to express herself.
And, yeah.
I'm the one kind of sitting here just as a
red tomato.
Yes, as a red tomato, but also having the opportunity just to kind of reflect on her sage words.
What would you say, Rabbi Rose? I know one way to take is, I think as a priest, and I would say the church can do such a better job of talking about sex, and I think we're afraid to do it because of the same obstacles, you know, not just pop culture in general is saying something completely different. We know there's so much sex happening outside of marriage, and maybe the adults who would be leading the class had their own experiences of having sex outside of marriage, so like, well, who am I to teach a class? But sometimes I like to go back to also just the practical aspect and the beauty of what it really means to treasure and the intimacy of sex and see it strictly as something that's in a monogamous relationship. And also sometimes looking at, well, nature pretty much backs that up, that when we start to treat sex and our bodies and just start giving away freely, even biology, even nature says, well, okay, well, we got these things called STDs that can just pop up. If you start giving this away freely without knowing someone, having an intimate connection with them, emotionally, you're really at risk here. You can, even if it's not even just with any kind of sexual acts, it stirs up parts. You start to feel connected with this other human being, but you don't know if this other human being is really that into you. And the next thing you know, they're gone. And now you're just weeping and crying because you kind of feel used. There's a whole, obviously, it's a procreative act. So this is such a sacred and blessed thing. And if you want to share that with someone that you're not sure, you're really want to spend the rest of your life with, there might be a child that comes out of this, and then now what? And now you're a single parent. I mean, do you think those practical more approaches too, and saying, there's a reason why God and nature are pretty much in the same thing here. Have you ever had someone say, let me rethink this, and I want to rethink the way that I explore my intimacy with another person?
I have without, you know, obviously naming names. I have a student who used to be a lot more promiscuous, and then she realized how, with, you know, over time and through education Jewishly as well, that she realized that was not the right course for her, and it was bad for her self-esteem, bad for her spiritual life, bad for how she thought about herself, and she wanted to enter into a monogamous relationship, and she's much happier, and she's, you know, and I think that that has happened for the students. I think sometimes they get to college and it's like, woo, I'm free and I can drink and I go out and, you know, my parents aren't with me anymore, and they go really wild. And then they kind of rein that in later and realize, wow, that's not healthy. That's not good for me. And then we can really start to give them a religious framing to that. For example, teaching them, do you guys know that in Judaism, yes, a husband is commanded to have sex with his wife, and certain times per week, you know, like sex can be positive and it can be awesome and sexy in a committed relationship.
So I think that story right there is just to love to hear more of that, of how people said, yes, you know, when my conversations with the rabbi, reflecting it from my own religious eyes and realizing it was healthier. I did feel better about myself. My self-esteem went way up by realizing that I was using sex or just the hookup culture to fill a void that I had inside of me. I just was lonely. I just needed attention. I need to feel that I was powerful as a man, that I could be a conqueror. What's that all about? There's some insecurity there. Like, why is that there? And I think hopefully as religious leaders and as folks within churches and synagogues and mosques that we can help communicate that message, because it all comes down to self-worth and validation, which you and I would look at as being validated by the one and true God, the only one who can validate us, not through sexual acts. So, well, we covered a lot here. Thank you for all our callers. Rabbi Rose, God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
I think we need you on here again. And tell everyone where you're located at.
The Hillel of Broward and Palm Beach and at FSU and also NSU and Lynn.
All right. So if you got questions about sex, you can email her. And what can they email you?
Sure.
Where can they email you at?
RabbiRose@HillelCenter.org.
Rabbi Rose. All right. Well, Mateo Durbin, the quickest way to get you to just be quiet is just start talking about sexual intimacy. So I learned something today.
Me too.
All right.
Me too.
All right. That's one thing we learned today. The other thing we do today is keep the prayers and also the action of where our Lord is leading us to bring a more just and peaceful society and to stand up against hate. God bless you all. We'll see you next week.